Grabbing another bottle of water. I've been fighting a throat thing here. So.
Uh-oh.
You know how that goes.
I do. And we are live. And hey, what's up, everyone? So today, I get to talk to my pal, Scott McCain. Scott's got a new book out called Iconic, How Organizations and Leaders Sustain and Regain the Ultimate Level of Distinction. Because Scott is the master of distinction. When you hear his voice, you'll know Scott McCain. And I'm just delighted that he's here. He's a Hall of Fame speaker. He's a really great author and a really genuinely nice man. And I'm glad that he's here with me. What's up, Scott?
Bill, what a thrill. I watch these all the time. And you do such a great job as an interviewer and you're a pal. And so it's a real privilege to be here for a lot of reasons. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, totally my pleasure, man. I mean, it's great because I read the book, right? And then I'm like, okay, well, I got questions. So what do? Scott, let's talk about your book and what you're up to.
Great.
Pretty simple, man. Well, you know, there's lots of places we could start with the book, but I want to start with a chapter that's nearest and dearest to my heart and one ready that I agree with. And it is chapter 5, Stop Selling, right? Yeah. So stop selling, Scott. So we're telling people they don't need to eat, right? They don't need to sell anything. That's what we're talking about.
You know, I say in the first paragraph of that chapter, look, I realize that you've got to sell something to keep from going under. You know, I've got to book speeches. You know, you do the same. I mean, whatever it is that we sell, we all have to make things happen to continue. But I think part of the problem is that it's how we view, quote unquote, selling. Selling has stopped being the transference of goods and services through worthy experiences into how do I twist your arm or make the deal or close you or, I mean, think about this, close you. When you deal with a tragic situation, you seek closure. So what, the sale is going to be a tragic situation and we're going to seek closure or we're going to overcome objections. I'm a customer. I don't want you to overcome me. I want you to help me. I want you to deal with me. So when you look at some of the traditional terminology that we've used in selling, it really talks more about, for all of the win-win and that, we really have structured it in a way that is pretty antiquated for today's marketplace.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so important, right? It's the mindset of selling. And if we really shift it to the mindset of serving, that's the ultimate way to be iconic and to be distinct is because if people remember, you know, when I talk to Scott, Scott's always so helpful. He can help me, right? He can solve my problems even when, and I would argue especially when, the answer isn't him. And I think that's often the difference here when we talk to folks, because they're not realizing that they're the ultimate kind of secret weapon in everything, right? If they're iconic, if they're distinctive, that helps the brand be distinctive. So how do we convince companies, Scott, that it's okay to have iconic, distinctive employees that even if they leave, it's still an okay thing to have?
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes no sense to me, but yet we see this so many times in business.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's so funny that you talk about that. I see that all the time. We talk about that, right? We do things that don't inspire us, that don't inspire our hearts. And then we wonder why people underperform, right? Yeah. We really think, what the heck, right? Like that's not really exciting. So how do we get more exciting? Is it just as simple as just setting bigger goals, Scott? I mean, how do we get more iconic towards those ambitions?
Yeah, I think what we have to do is a couple things, and neither are easy, Phil. And I mean, I didn't put it in this book. I put it in a previous book, but I think sometimes we confuse something that looks easy with being easy to do. When I see Barbara Streisand sing, it seems so effortless, and yet try to do that. When I see Elton John play the piano, he's having so much fun and it seems so effortless. Okay, now sit down and try to do that. The hardest thing in the world is to make it look easy. And so when I'm saying these things, I know that there are some people that go, well, that looks easy. Well, that should indicate how breathtakingly difficult it is to do. But it begins with us examining, and I did put this in the book, about customers judge us on two things, our promise and our performance. And so we have to analyze very specifically what are we promising, not just our customers, but our employees. What's the implied promise? What do we see? And even more importantly, what is their perception of the promise? Because they're going to judge us not based on what we say, but what they perceive that we've said. So we really have to study that and understand that. What do customers believe that we promised them? And then secondly, how does our performance align with the promise? Because we have to be honest. We have to be ethical. We have to be congruent. And so what our goal should be, both internally with our employees and externally with our customers, is that we're going to continue to advance our promise. In other words, get better at what we're promising while we simultaneously elevate our performance so the congruency is there. What happens often is companies don't want to promise too much, and then they deliver here, so customers kind of expect the promise to be elevated, and companies go, oh, no, wait, we didn't promise. And this gets out of whack. Or you promise an employee this, and then you deliver this, and then wonder why you don't have retention. And so it's really, really hard to do. But the really iconic companies are constantly advancing the promise as they are escalating the performance so that they continue to inspire their customers and their employees by the quality with which they do their business.
I think that's an excellent point about we have to continue to make them pillars that move up at the same time, because yeah, when there's not that congruity, we're going to fall over. That's not foundational, right? That ends up being
exactly.
And often not even repeatable, because if it's a fluke, that could surprise and delight them, but it could surprise and delight in a bad way, which often is not what we're looking to get there.
You make a great point, Phil, and we need to be talking more about this. Exactly what you said is that so many times we elevate the isolated incident. I was reading the story, and as a matter of fact, I did a blog a while back about this story about this young man that walked to work, and you know, he was walking to a job interview and the guy picks him up and he gives him a job. And we really elevated that story and how wonderful that was. But then nobody really wrote about it. A while later, the restaurant went out of business because they didn't provide the level of service to customers that would keep the restaurant going open. And I worry about that sometimes. We elevate these isolated incidents instead of honoring the consistent performer. And that's what we really want. I'll read these great stories about something that a flight attendant does on a flight, but what I really want is that when I'm flying that airline, that the plane is clean, that they leave on time, that people are friendly, and that they just do what they're supposed to do. If it's an unusual circumstance, I love it when they make an extraordinary effort. But what I'd really rather know is, do they do what they said they would do when they said they would do it as they said it was going to be done? If they do those things, as crazy as it sounds, it makes them extraordinary in today's marketplace.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. So I when I think about that, the consistency factor, you know, mm-hmm. Two people come to my mind when I think about kind of marketing and sales, and that's Seth Godin and Anthony Iannarino.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they write every single day. They put out content every single day. And that consistency, it's not that I'm reading them every single day, but when I do, I know I'm going to get something fresh. And that is so, so important. And at that point, I really think organizations need to not just isolate those incidents, not just hope like hell that they get an Oprah effect, right? Yeah. That, hey, if Scott McCain could just mention me on his Twitter account, right, then I would be successful. No. Be successful, deliver the goods every single day consistently, and eventually you're gonna get to a point where people are going to expect that and then be like, wow, where did they come from? Is that iconic as well, Scott?
Oh, it is. I mean, iconic performance cannot be based on random incidents. Iconic performance, you know, I mean, when we look at iconic leaders, It's not because they did one good thing, right? It's because there was a sustained level of excellence over an extended period of time. And that's what we're really looking for. And aren't we looking for that in business? I mean, when I purchase a service or a product, I want a sustained level of performance over an extended period of time. If I buy a new coffee maker, I don't want it to make two fabulous cups of coffee and then I've got to take it to the shop and then they go, yeah, but those two cups of coffee, man, they were fantastic. You know, no, I'm going to be complaining because this thing wouldn't last. So I want it to do, we have higher expectations than we ever have before. You know, a pal of mine, Dr. Michael LaBeouf, I don't know if you had a chance to meet him or not, Phil. He's at University of New Orleans. Fascinating guy. He's retired from the University of New Orleans, lives in Phoenix now. But he wrote this book, oh gosh, it's been 15, 20 years ago, that really made an impression on me. And it's called GMP, and that stands for Greatest Management Principle. Later it was released as a book called Getting Results. They retitled it. But the greatest management principle simply is this: behavior rewarded is behavior repeated. Now that sounds very simplistic until you drill into it a little bit more deeply. For example, we take care of our customers. That's behavior rewarded. Guess what's going to happen? They elevate their expectations. Well, if you did this now, and they continue, if they continue to ask more and we deliver, guess what's going to happen? Behavior rewarded is behavior repeated. They're going to continue to ask a little bit more and a little bit more. Now, is that fair? Well, it doesn't matter. It's the way it is. Right? I mean, I can say it's not fair, but it's still going to be the way it is because it is the principle that behavior rewarded is behavior repeated. So what we have to ask then is, what is the behavior that we're rewarding? Here's another example. I was part of a meeting a couple weeks ago. They had a bunch of consultants come in to a big company and talk to them, and they were so proud that immediately a customer complaining could get a response on social media. And so I asked a couple questions. I said, well, so how about if they call the local office? Well, if they do that, the responses are, so in other words, to complain on social media gets a quicker response than calling the local office. Yes. They were really proud of that. And I said, okay, so if I complain on social media, all of my followers read that. Why would you want me to, why would you be rewarding me with instant response of sharing my complaints with, you know, Mike, 40,000 Twitter followers? Why would you want them to know that I've got a complaint with your company? And they literally went, well, we never thought of that. And I said, and because I can get instant response to that rather than calling, now you've ensured that every time I'm going to post and every friend that's got a problem with you, I'm going to say, hey, don't call the office, put it online. We don't think deeply enough about what behavior we are rewarding. They were rewarding me for telling 40,000 other people I had a problem with their company. I don't get it. But we don't think about those things.
That's so interesting. That, you know, It becomes just a vicious cycle too, to that, right? Because now every little problem that I want fixed, I'm blasting it out like it's the biggest problem on the planet. Instead of a quick phone call that says, hey, Scott, I need some more towels in my room. No, I'm going to send out a social media post. I'm going to send out a tweet. I'll post it to Facebook and I'm going to let the world know that I need more towels.
Yeah.
That's just, oh my gosh.
And not just that I need more towels, but that, boy, they didn't take care of my needs.
Yeah.
Which is much deeper than I need a towel, right? I mean, I think that's not iconic thinking. Iconic thinking is, how do I serve the customer in a very intimate and instant and approachable way? And the more that we can say, get in touch with us personally and we'll respond personally. I get it because it's easier to have 40 people in a room in Philadelphia answering these problems immediately than it is to have you call your local office in Tampa, right? I can tweet you and I can solve it immediately, but they didn't think that next level. And I think that's what all of us have to do because again, these times have changed so dramatically that we can't use old solutions to today's problems.
Yeah, totally agree. So along that, though, let's talk about this. I think this is something that is an old idea, but is totally new again. And that is the idea of reciprocal respect.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
And that's because, I mean, truly, right? If I respect you, you respect me. That goes back and forth. That seems pretty obvious, but there's a lot more to it, Scott. Can you explain that? Because you talk about it really well in the book.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. That was something that was really important to me because, and Phil, you see it every day too. These people who want to be respected, they want to receive a higher level of respect than they're willing to extend. And we see it so much in the news. And I would like to think that no one ever gets up in the morning and drives to work and thinks, you know, today I can, you know, be overly critical of a subordinate and make them feel badly. Today I can discriminate based upon somebody not like me. Today I can, you know, I don't want to think that people do that. But yet when we see the actions that people take, those things are happening. And I think part of where that springs from is that we desire respect shown our way, but we don't want to be willing to extend it at a similar level. And human relations, whether they're professional or personal, have to be congruent. For example, I could go to somebody and I could say, hey, do you know Phil? And if they said, Phil is my best friend, and I wrote their name down and I went to you and I said, hey, do you know them? The likelihood is pretty good that you're going to go, oh, they're a great friend. Right? Because people who say you're my best friend, they're either your best friend. I mean, it's reciprocal. It probably wouldn't happen that they would say, Phil is my best friend. And I would go to you and you'd go, man, I barely know who's that.
Who's that?
Our relationships tend to be reciprocal. Yet when we get in business, we get leaders that want respect, but they don't offer that same commensurate level of respect to their teams. Or which in turn means their teams don't offer that level of respect to customers. And that's what we see so much. I use some examples in the book where I felt kind of abused as a customer. And then I realized later on, you know, was it the employee or was it really the manager? Because disrespected employees create disrespected customers. And then the challenge then, if you're going to be a leader, is that we have to go first, right? We can't sit back and wait on our team or our customers to show us that respect and then say, okay, now since you've shown me this, now leaders go first. And that's what we have to do. And there's another little part, and I got this from our pal Larry Winget and kind of tweaked it and tailored it for my purpose. But the genesis of the idea was from Larry. And Larry and I were talking one time, and he said, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if instead of the word tolerate, we had to substitute the word endorse? That you couldn't say, well, we'll tolerate that behavior. What if you had to get up and say, okay, we'll endorse that behavior? Since we're tolerating it, we might as well say we endorse it. Could you imagine if Miramax's board had to go up and say, you know, we endorse Harvey Weinstein's behavior?
Ouch.
Now we know, yeah, I mean, now, we know that some of them said, off the record, but we know that some of them said, well, we had to tolerate it because he was successful. No, you didn't. You endorsed it. It changes the game. We can't be let off the hook, right? If you put up with bad behavior in the workplace, then what you've done is you've endorsed bad behavior in the workplace, and none of us should be willing to do that. And I really get passionate about that because I just think there's been too much of that going on for too long. And people that are willing to say, well, you know, but he's a good performer, so we had to tolerate his comments to women or his, you know, racist approach. I mean, no, if you've tolerated it, you've endorsed it. And I hope it changes the thinking and changes the mind, even if it does it for one person, you know, it's made a contribution. So thanks to Larry for that. And it's something I wanted to share in the book as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, Larry's super smart, man. I've learned a ton from him over the years. And I know you're good buddies with him. His stuff, it's funny because he's one of those guys that just tells it like it is. And this is one of those Larryisms that is so profound when you really go deeper than just, you know, just the surface. If we really think about that, would you really endorse it? And if you wouldn't, then you really shouldn't tolerate it. You should really stand up and say, no, that's not okay. That's not what I want. That I don't tolerate that. I mean, because I've certainly seen that in organizations too, Scott, where, you know, the top performer, and I'm going to use air quotes here, top performer gets away with really nasty stuff because they're the top performer. When in reality, I would tell you, because I've watched this, when I got promoted, I let go of some of those top performers and everybody else raises up.
Yep.
Because they wanted to be a better performer, but that person's behavior was squashing them down. So that level of respect wasn't there.
Oh, and you've heard too in organizations, still to piggyback on what you're saying, you've heard people say too, if that's what it takes, then I don't want to be that, right? And so they reduce their own behavior because if that's what the top performer is, I don't want to be that. So then you get that out of the way, and exactly, I could not agree more. Then it frees them to go, okay, now. And that's the other thing. What are our values as a leader, as an organization, as whatever it is that we do? How do we demonstrate our values in a manner that is consistent with our performance?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. That's a great question. And we have to do that consistently over time, right? That respect, that's how you become iconic, folks. You want to think about that. You want to shift your thinking from tolerate to endorse. You want to shift your thinking. You really want to be consistent. You want to keep your promises, and you want to be more respectful to everybody that you encounter. That's why you get iconic. So that's the book. It's iconic. Scott McCain is the author. It's a fabulous book, folks.
Thank you.
If you're looking for something to read that you're like, you know, I really want to shift my thinking, my leadership, this is the book for you. ScottMcCain.com. You find it on Amazon and everywhere else. But Scott, if people have questions for you and they want to interact with you about the book you know, no more. What's the best way? What's the best social platform or whatever to reach out?
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, LinkedIn is great. Scott McCain, and it's MCKAIN. I'm spelled a little bit differently. MCKAIN. LinkedIn is great. I'm on Twitter and respond on Twitter all the time. Just at Scott McCain. You can go to iconicbusinessbook.com and get in touch with us there. ScottMcCain.com obviously tells you all about my speaking, but any of those platforms. Our mutual friend Scott Stratton talks about it's social media, which means we should be social, and that's what I try to do. So anybody has any questions, comments, any way I can help, I just get in touch with you there. And it's not a bot; it's me personally responding, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with anybody like to talk about it.
Awesome, thanks, Scott. So again, folks, the book is iconic. The man is Scott McCain. Give it a read. Pay attention to Scott. Move from just tolerate to endorse and become iconic. Thanks so much, Scott. Great stuff.
Thank you,
everyone.
Bye, Bruce. See ya.
All right, buddy. So that's the show.